everybody. Welcome to another edition of Double Cross Radio, coming to you live from the Republic of Jefferson, deep in the heart of freedom. And tonight, I'm Chuck Horton, and tonight I'm joined by my co-host, Drew Lamb. Hi, Drew.
Hey, Chuck. How's it going?
And we're going to bring you some updates of some recent things that have been happening that are going to affect your life, and I'm going to just jump right into it. Drew, tell us what's happening with Fukushima.
Well, in case nobody's paying attention, it's melting out, melting down. What's happening right now is worse than China syndrome. I mean, at least with China syndrome, you have a situation where your corium is melted into the earth. It doesn't actually melt all the way through and out the other side. So far, nothing like that's ever happened. But what we have because of the cheap construction of those reactors, what are those? The Mark One reactors, boiling water reactors is what they're called. I think GE's design of those was kind of like the manufactured home of nuclear reactors, modular construction for nuclear reactors. And so they built these lousy reactors and it's been, pretty hard to contain the corium. I mean, they don't know where the corium is, and they're flushing water through these things all the time. And it's flowing out into the ground, flowing out into the ocean, steaming up into the air. This has been going on since March 11th, 2011. And the bad news just keeps coming from this. You know, I've been talking about this for years now, that I believe that the jet stream was blasting right on California and northern Mexico during the worst of the disaster, which followed Unit 3 detonating. And now, we're seeing studies where scientists are going, yeah, the lettuce crop in California was contaminated with cesium-137. Well, that totally jives with tests that I did on vegetables, from the San Joaquin Valley and from northern Mexico. They were about six times background radiation. So the truth is coming out. Recently, there was a super typhoon, Vong Fong, I believe, was the last one. And so I'm on Energy News right now. And if you guys aren't familiar with Energy News, if you're a Fukushima truther, I know you are, but if not, check out Energy News. The web address is anynews.com. And whoever maintains this, I don't know who's put this together, but they're a saint. This website is absolutely amazing. And I think that this is just a person who has chosen to remain anonymous that keeps this going. But this is really the best site to find out what's going on. So here's an article here: record radiation at Fukushima after Vong Fong. First test since Tuesday's typhoon show radioactive material continues rising near the ocean. Officials, we can't do more to stop this. Depth and scope of contamination flowing out are unknown. And there's some headlines here from Japan Times, NHK World, and Yahoo News. And I'll go through some of this here. Radioactivity spikes in number one reactor well water. TEPCO said there has been a sharp spike in the radioactivity of water samples taken from an observation well by the sea, located to the east of the damaged number two reactor. The well is positioned close to an underground trench by the sea that is connected to number two building. Speaking at a press conference on Tuesday, TEPCO official Isao Shirai, pardon my Japanese, I don't speak Japanese, reporters said that increased radioactivity in the water could be due to higher levels of groundwater caused by recent typhoons mixing with radioactive elements. NHK World reports cesium in groundwater rises at plant after the storm. TEPCO says it has detected high levels of radioactive cesium in groundwater after last week's heavy rainfall from typhoon. Highly contaminated water seeped into soil and likely caused radioactive substances in the soil to flow into the groundwater. Officials plan to increase the frequency of water tests to every day to monitor the effects of the heavy rainfall. But they say it will be difficult to take drastic steps because they do not know how far the contaminated water seeped into the ground after the accident. Yahoo News, radiation increases in Fukushima aquifers after typhoon. The level of radioactive contamination detected in the underground water of the damaged Fukushima nuclear plant has increased after torrential rain, TEPCO said Wednesday. Rainwater seeped into the subsoil and mixed with contaminated fluid coming from the damaged reactors. Plant managers are expected to take samples of groundwater in the area more often and analyze the evolution of the radiation, according to TEPCO. For the moment, additional measures have been ruled out since the depth and scope of the contaminated water leaks are unknown, of course. Large amounts of contaminated water, much of which flows into the Pacific Ocean, are one of the major challenges that are still unresolved in the nuclear power plant. Yes, and there's been some new models prepared. I'll have to do some digging to find them. I posted something a few weeks ago showing a huge cesium plume in the Pacific Ocean making its way to the west coast of the USSA. And some of it might be here already, but it's a massive plume, and it's going to continue to get worse over time. I think something by like 2020, the levels were going to be extremely high. I can't say how many becquerels off the top of my head off the coast of California. And so this is a serious problem. And so many people, even people who worked in the nuclear industry, didn't believe that material could travel in the air or in the water far enough to reach the coast of the USSA. But it did, you know, and the airborne plume was the first to get us, and we've got the plume in the water, and of course, you know, any debris that was radioactive that's washed over this way. And we'll continue to see more of this happen. I've had some spikes on my Geiger counter over the past few days. It was a bit low today, actually. I saw it dip down to 26 CPMs. I was happy to see that. But a few days ago, it was up in the 60s, even as high as 66 CPMs. And there was a Geiger counter over in Corvallis. I noticed on one of the networks that was, I think it was over 170 CPMs. And so I don't know if they were having a malfunction or if they were picking something up or what kind of gear they have over there. There's a lot of things that could affect that. But I would imagine, you know, I was getting high readings at the time too. So I would imagine they were picking up something in the air or in the rainwater. So people still need to protect themselves from this. You need to be really careful about what you eat, the source of your food, and that's becoming more and more difficult. You know, you need to grow your food under cover, but again, you have to irrigate your food or your crops. And if your soil's contaminated, your plants are going to phytoextract that. If your soil's contaminated, it's getting really hard to mix up good quality potting soil. You know, I mean, your best bet is really to go hydroponic or aquaponic. And you could run some filtration systems on there to try to filter out some of the radioactive material. You know, zeolite clay and whatnot could help reduce that. So you could incorporate that into the design of an aquaponic or hydroponic system and then grow undercover. And so that's probably your best bet if you really are dedicated to eating clean food. And because it gets into everything. Sorry, my phone's turned on. It just gets into everything. And, you know, for a while, I think for the first 2 years or so, I was able to avoid a lot of contaminated food just from growing my own food and eating some of the food that was in my own personal food storage, food reserves. But, you know, you get to a point where you have to go out and get new food, or you go out to a restaurant and you have no idea where it was grown, what conditions it was under. And it's you know, it's almost impossible to avoid and live a normal life. And, you know, and if you want to survive this, I guess we might have to redefine what normal is now.
Drew, if I interrupt just a second, Jill's just posted in chat that she's at 2 CPMs right now, and she spiked at 27 2 days ago. Now, that 27 is below the average for the West Coast.
Sure. Well, if I do a 10-minute count, I don't have the Geiger counter with me right now. I'm at my farm. But if I do a 10-minute count, it's usually 38 to 42 CPMs.
Yeah.
But it used to be 6 to 16 CPMs. It used to rarely be over 30 CPMs.
Right.
Now it's almost never under 30. So, it's great that we're getting low counts today. I don't know where the jet stream is. Maybe the jet stream.
My point was that if you had some relatives on the East Coast, or you could hook up with a job on the East Coast, that might be one thing you might want to really consider strongly.
But not necessarily. Florida, for example, has received the highest amount of fallout.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, once that radiation gets into the troposphere, it could come down anywhere. So it's hard to avoid it if you're going to be in North America or in the Northern Hemisphere. You could go down to the Southern Hemisphere, but that's not free of radiation. You know, the ocean waters mix, and the South Pacific will eventually be contaminated if it isn't already. And there was nuclear weapons testing, you know, in the oceans down there, and there are nuclear power plants in South America. So it is difficult to avoid it. But being downwind of Fukushima is a pretty dangerous place to be right now, I think. So
yeah, and that's where we are.
We're Fukushima downwinders, and then
that's right, and we're the place where all the rain dumps. A lot of the stuff comes out in the rain in the Cascade Mountains here, and
if you live near a nuclear power plant, you get a double dose. We're downwind of a nuclear power plant that was in Northern California that was decommissioned in the 80s over there in Humboldt Bay. And they're still working on that. Our friend Phil Elcock works over there on that project.
Yeah.
And I think they've got nuclear fuel and dry cask, but they're still working on it. They have major decontamination procedures they have to follow. But you know, we're downwind of that. I'm sure that we've received some sort of fallout from that. You know, all the plants produce something. All of them leak tritium. So I've lived downwind of that site for the majority of my life. And then there's people that live near the Hanford site, and all sorts of problems coming from that. You know, there's cluster of birth defects in the Yakima area that some are attributing to the leaky tanks and things over at Hanford. And
I think it's really contributed to, there's a rise in the rate of death. Hmm. So more people are dying. I guess they're dying a little bit quicker than they were before. And that could be attributed to more people in the baby boomer age getting to a time of life when they're more susceptible to diseases. So that could continue to happen, whether there's radioactive or not. But
I'm amazed by how many people I know that have died just since June. And
yeah,
I had a family member even recently died in July. But I've had so many of my friends over the last few months lose their fathers, and I've just seen a cluster of deaths. And even last night I learned that, one of my great uncles passed away. He was quite, he was up there. He was in his 80s, and he had what they call, I guess what they call now, asbestosis or something like that. I guess that's what they're calling it now. Was it before mesothelioma? But I think it's new information that's saying that that's not caused from exposure to asbestos fiber. So they've got a new name for it now. Asbestosis, I guess, is what it is. So, he's up in his 80s. So, they say he died from that, but I mean, you're not going to live forever. Something, you're going to die from something. Speaking of which, I felt like I've been coming down with a cold for the last few days, and had a pretty severe cough. It was getting really bad yesterday. I was really feeling rough, and so I brewed up some colloidal silver, and I've been dosing with a lot of vitamin C. I've been taking a couple thousand milligrams of vitamin C every day, and bumped up my D intake, and started taking a multivitamin. But I brewed up some colloidal silver, and I took a teaspoon of that and a few shots of whiskey, and I actually slept through the night and have felt pretty good today. A little bit rough right now. I'd never taken the colloidal silver before, and I have to admit I'm a little bit nervous about it. You know, I've done a lot of research on it, and the information depends on the source. I mean, if you go to any like mainstream medical site, you know, they say, oh, it's dangerous, you shouldn't take it, it doesn't work, it doesn't do anything. You know, if you go to alternative sites, they always say, you know, it's great. And then you get the people talking about how you're going to turn blue, you know, or get what's that condition called, agruria. I think that's what it's called.
I've seen a couple of those people.
Yeah, well, you have.
Yeah, well, there's one at the co-op earlier this year.
Well, I think that could happen if you don't brew it right. Like if you brew like a really potent dose. So if you let it go for a long time and you put salt in with the distilled water, it creates larger silver particles. And then if you overdose with that, then the silver salts are going to build up in your tissues and you'll turn blue. And there was a story that came out a few years ago, I think in 2008 or so, about a guy who turned blue, and that he admitted that was the case. He made his colloidal silver with salt, and he was taking massive quantities of it. So, I don't know. I think it's difficult to get, you know, the right information as to whether it's good for you or not good for you. You know, if you do take it, you know, maybe just do it with caution and don't overdo it. You know, don't drink a pint of the stuff.
Yeah. Well, we're going to move on to the next thing, unless there's something more on Fukushima we need to know. I just think that people need to keep an eye on that for, you know, they can't be relying on us to update them all the time. They should be taking.
Yeah.
This is something that they need to. Yeah.
Business as usual. Stay out of the rain. Know where your food's coming from. Grow your food undercover.
But you also need to check the readings all the time too. I mean, just it doesn't take very long every day. Just
sometimes I check my Geiger counter before I go outside almost all of the time. And if I'm getting high counts, I wait it out until the plume passes.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go out. And same with letting my dog out. I'll check, see if there's high counts. Or there's been times when I saw high counts and I called her in the house. So it's just responsible. It's the way it is. You know, if you put on a raincoat when you go outside, or put on a hat when it's cold. You know, it's common sense. You look both ways when you cross the street.
That's right.
At least, you know, if a truck's coming, you get out of the way. It's just, you know, if you want to continue with this experience, you know, as a human being on this planet, you know, you got to look out for yourself.
Yes, you do. And, you know, also, as we move on here, this is an awkward segue, but we're going to go on to part two. I'm just going to pause for a second here. So in case we want to chop this up later for a special small report, we can. Okay. Our second part of the show today, we're going to be talking about interview that I posted on our Facebook page last week. It was on the weekend, and it was the president of the Mises Institute, Jeff Dice, was interviewing a man from Switzerland who's involved with their politics and banking, and he's an economist, and he's he was interviewing him about what's an upcoming stuff that's happening in Switzerland. They're going to have a vote in November to increase their reserve requirement of gold backing their currency. Now, presently, it's at 7%. So 7% of their currency has to be backed by gold. It's kind of like fractional reserve banking is how they always work that way. Well, they're thinking that that isn't good enough, and there's a big movement of afloat to try and change that reserve requirement to 20%, and they're going to have this vote in November. Now, at the present, Switzerland has 1,040 tons of gold. To move up to a 20% reserve requirement would require them to purchase 1,500 tons of gold. And that sounds like a lot, and it really is, but it's basically that's about how much gold is produced every 6 months. So it gives you kind of a perspective of what kind of impact is possible. Now, 1,500 tons is about, at today's price, and by the way, today gold is at $1,239.90, so we'll say $1,240 an ounce. At that price, it's approximately $59.5 billion to purchase, you know, to buy that gold to back their currency. Now, just being kind of a common sense guy, I'm thinking that's got to have a dramatic effect on the price of gold. If someone goes out there and tries to buy $59.5 billion worth of gold, the price would tend to move up. And so I asked my good friend at the gold and silver place here in Southern Oregon, and I think I got there. It's called Southern Oregon Gold and Silver. How about that? Anybody in Southern Oregon, I recommend them highly. They really know a lot about what they're doing, and it's a good place. They have anybody that's going to sell you gold or silver has to make a markup on it to stay in business. Theirs is among the lowest that I've found, and I just enjoy talking with both Bill and Lisa there, and they're great people. Anyway, I was asking him what he thought about this, and he said, and this is almost a quote, this is kind of paraphrasing what he said, but he said, "Non-existent gold is creating an artificial supply that is pushing prices of real gold down." How much longer this can go on is anybody's guess, but when they stop this kind of manipulation, gold will probably go pretty close to straight up. Now, he didn't want to speculate on how high it would go, because, I mean, who knows? We don't even know how many you know, Federal Reserve notes are out there in circulation. It's a lot more than you think, I think, because it's the world's trading currency, and we've been able to get away with basically counterfeiting money for decades. And ever since we went off the gold standard in 71, now, we weren't getting away with it then. When we were printing more and more money to pay for a war in Vietnam, all these places out around the world that had American dollars said, "Hey, let's go and let's exchange this for gold in USA." So our gold reserves basically dwindled down to almost nothing. And Nixon had to take us off the gold window because we did not have gold to continue redeeming those bills in gold. So from that point on, we were that was quite a big deal at the time. I don't know if any of you are old enough to have witnessed that. I lived through that period of time, kind of dating myself, and it was a big deal. And it was it made quite a few foreign nations pretty upset with us, as you can well imagine. They thought they had something worth something, and now it was worth a lot less. But I've heard people speculate on the price that the gold could go to, and they've speculated anywhere from $3,000 an ounce to $10,000 an ounce when this happens. Now, I don't know if it'll stay up that high or if it might go higher. Who knows? We don't know how much money is in circulation. We really don't. We have some estimates and some guesses, but
Doug Casey speculated go over $300,000 an ounce.
There you go. So, and you know,
the upside is infinite. You know, downside's finite.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way I look.
But if this was like 2 years worth of production, I would say Doug Casey is probably really close to it. But the fact that it's a 6 months worth of production, as the price goes up, places where there's gold that are kind of marginal in terms of profitability will suddenly be in production. So there'll be a lot more being produced, I think. So I think it will go up, and then those places will start going into production. The price will fall for a while, and then it'll level out. And so you may want to be ready for that and cash in when it's near the top. And I don't know what the top is going to be, but if it got to 300,000, I would suggest you sell.
Or exchange it for something that you want more. I wouldn't be happy exchanging my precious metal for Federal Reserve notes.
You might want to transfer it to another hard asset.
Yeah, I'd want to get my barge and my tugboat so I could pull it out into the Caribbean and have my Galt's Gulf.
Caribbean. Yes, Galt's Gulf. Love that.
It's paradise. Yeah, that's what I plan to do when precious metals correct.
So, you can buy gold in as small an increment as 10th of an ounce. They might even have something smaller than that. And if you can't afford that, that's about $140 a pop now, I guess, because they have to make a little bit of money on this. So so instead of selling it to you for $124, they'll sell it to you for about $140. So they make $16 on it. And you might be able to find someplace that makes $10 or $8, but you're going to have to buy a whole bunch to get it that kind of a breakdown of commission. So if you can't afford that much, you can always buy silver because silver will follow gold. Now,
yeah, and I was hoping that silver was going to correct in August. What was that? August 14th when the London silver fix was stopped. I thought the market would correct it, but you know, it's gone down a bit.
Yeah, and I don't know if it will correct from that at all, because I think the people that are manipulating the prices are doing so on the, like I said, they're doing it with non-existent silver. They're basically almost like derivatives. The same thing that crushed the housing market. And when it happens, it's going to happen real fast and it's going to collapse just bang.
Right.
Just like it did in housing. And people think it's going to go on like this forever. It won't. When it stops very suddenly. And think of it as falling up a cliff. Mm-hmm. It's going to go straight up almost. That's just how it's going to be. So anyway, let's see. The things that I would tell you people to do is now is a good time to be accumulating these things, because gold and silver are on sale. Their prices are being artificially manipulated to a lower price to try and hide the inflation of the dollars that are being printed. The banksters are the people that own these huge banks. They're collecting gold and silver. They're buying it. You can bet that the people that are the central bankers in Europe, they're collecting gold for their own personal wealth and for their banks. They're all doing it. As I say, Switzerland is going to try and increase their gold holdings because they know that something's going to happen. That's what this referendum's about. So don't be a dummy. It says it's not going to go up. It's going to go up, and it might go down before it goes up. Don't let that be a problem. Don't let that be a factor. You're in it for the long haul.
And also other people prefer to exchange goods or services with precious metals. And so a silver coin would be more valuable to somebody that doesn't want to deal with credit cards or Federal Reserve notes, you know, or other things. And, you know, so I've seen even recently where, who was that was giving some lectures down here and the price was, 1 ounce of silver that they were valuing at about $32, even though the market was only valuing it at 20 something, you know? So, your local market could be very different than the market on the exchanges.
You know, yes, it can be. And, when things break down, the one thing that nobody's going to know is how much anything's worth, because the money is no longer the Federal Reserve notes are no longer going to be an accurate way to It's no longer going to be an accurate way to value the things that you're exchanging. And because, you know, money was invented by the marketplace. It was invented by governments, and it was invented so people could solve the problem of a double coincidence of wants. I mean, when you're going to barter with somebody, it works really well if you both want what the other person has. But if you don't, money kind of solves that problem. You can find somebody that does want what you have, and you can sell it to them, and then you can take the money and buy what the other person has that you want, and they don't have to take what you had. It also solves the problem of what to do if you produce automobiles and somebody wants to trade you eggs for it. You know, they're going to have to find other people to buy their eggs, because you don't want to buy a whole automobile's worth of eggs in order to make that exchange. So money solves all those problems, and it's kind of, like I said, the market brought it into play. And when things go into hyperinflation mode, you are not going to know what anything is worth based on Federal Reserve notes, because they're going to be worthless. And it's going to take increasing and increasing amounts of those paper dollars to buy anything. Mm-hmm. And if you have hard commodities like gold and silver, you're going to have, hopefully you're going to have enough people that are knowledgeable enough to realize that those things have proven value over 6,000 years, and they will be safe to take in exchange. And you'll have, I suggest you go out and get some junk silver, some old silver dimes, things like that, because though you're going to need some things in smaller amounts to make your trade. You don't want to trade an ounce of silver for a cup of coffee. You could do it, but you're not coming out very well on that exchange. The guy with the coffee is coming out ahead. It's probably worth about a silver dime. Depending on how designer coffee you get, I guess. Maybe two silver dimes. So anyway, that's my rant on that. I just think our listeners need to be updated and prepared for this. And I definitely think that these markets are being manipulated down. Don't be afraid if the price doesn't jump up. We're not saying it's going to happen today or tomorrow. I don't think anything's going to happen before that referendum. But if it passes, I expect the gold to start moving up. And if they can't push it back down, it might gather some momentum. And once people think this is a bull market in gold, it can take off on its own, and they won't be able to stop it. So just if you have some stuff accumulated beforehand, you could make some money if that happens. If it doesn't happen, it's going to happen sooner or later. I mean, I don't think it could last another 5 years, but that's me. I could be wrong. That's my opinion.
And what you're doing is preserving your purchasing power.
Yeah. That's right. I don't think it's much of a risk.
Yeah, other things will be less expensive compared to what the Federal Reserve note value of a precious metal coin would be. But you know, history shows that you could purchase that the purchasing power of silver coins, from pre-64 silver coins, has far outpaced the purchasing power of the dollar, the fiat
dollar. That's right. Okay, and so I think we've kind of wrapped this subject up too. I just wanted to alert people to that possibility and kind of maybe kick them in the rear end a little bit and get them started on this. I think just the act of going out and buying some gold, if 1,000 people went out and bought an ounce of gold, that would take $1,000 worth of gold off the market. Is you're going to buy it and hold it, because that's what it's for, really. It's your savings account. You can't put money in a bank and call that savings, because it's like it's on fire and it's a slow burn. It's a little bit of the value of that money is burning away every day, and it's going to get a lot worse as the dollar gets disconnected from foreign being the foreign or the trading dollar for the world. So I think we should move on. Last week, we had a really interesting show about Ebola, and we had Greg Askins on. Man, that guy is he knows so much about health things that work, plants that make fortify your immune system, that your immune system needs in order to be strong, and how to resist diseases and how to protect yourself and things like that. It's just, I can't say enough about the guy. You guys that live here in Southern Oregon, he's at the Health Food Mart in the Winco Shopping Center, and you should stop in and see him. He's got what you need for what is ailing you, and we can't call it a cure or treatment. It's just a supplement. They're dietary aids. They're the nutritional elements and materials that your body needs to replicate itself, and that's what your body is. It's a replicating machine. I've read somewhere that your liver replaces all the cells in a liver. Your body replaces all the cells in your liver every 30 days. But if you don't have the right parts, those cells are going to start becoming damaged. And disease can gain a foothold, and you can end up with cirrhosis of the liver, and maybe you don't even drink alcohol, but just from the other foods you eat, it puts a lot of work pressure on the liver, and it wears out faster than it should, and so it starts to die. Well, if you're eating the right kinds of foods and taking the right kinds of supplements, that's not going to happen. Your liver is going to be healthy and strong and continue to go. Same with your heart and all your other organs, your brain. For years, we were told that brain cells can't be reproduced. Once you have a certain number and so many of them die every day, and then you get old and senile, and that's it. And now we find out that's not true. They were lying to us, or they didn't really know what they were talking about. It's probably better way to define it. And so there's a lot of things. Yeah, Jules just said that turmeric is good for your liver. It's good for a lot of things. It's really good for your immune system too. So, and by the way, cholesterol is not bad for you. while we're on that, we talked about that a long time ago on a show when Greg was on here too. Cholesterol is a really vital part of your body, and your cholesterol readings on average should probably be somewhere between 250 and 350 somewhere. And 350 might be getting a little high. And it kind of depends on what kind of cholesterol you have in your system. But certainly if it gets below 200, that's too low. And you don't have enough cholesterol to do the important things that you need in your life. Now, cholesterol is really another really important thing that you need for your immune system. Cholesterol, when your skin is exposed to sunshine, cholesterol transforms itself into vitamin D. And vitamin D is a really important part of your immune system response. So if you're taking statin drugs, whatever, you're probably increasing your chances of getting sick. And if something like Ebola comes down the road, you have a much greater chance of contracting it, and you have probably a much greater chance of dying. So, I would stop taking statin drugs, and I would tell your doctor why, and tell him if he argues with you, tell you, well, I would like to get a second opinion before we go on with your treatments, because cholesterol is really important for your good health, and don't throw it away. Eat a lot of eggs; they're good for you. The yolk of the egg is important for your brain to develop. Now, since we had our show, we were at the end of the show, we were starting to talk a lot about how the CDC was kind of mishandling things, and we didn't have really time to get into it very, very, very well, I guess, or cover all the things that they said. But it seems like every press conference that they had, within a day or two, sometimes within hours of the press conference, facts would emerge that would show that everything they were talking about, they were just talking out of their rear end. I mean, they didn't really know what they were talking about. It's like they were making up stuff. They're just trying to reassure people. They didn't really have a grasp on what this situation was. And then we started to hear things that would come up that seemed to indicate that some of the things that they had told us were facts weren't true. For example, they said it isn't airborne. So people think that it's okay. You know, that there's no threat in the air, and that's kind of misleading. That by the definition of airborne, they are probably correct, but by what everybody else would think airborne would mean, it is not correct. And so, it can. When you sneeze, you aerosolize Ebola out there into the atmosphere, and someone can breathe it in and get it. They were trying to comfort people, reassure them, and they probably gave them some bad information. And people are going to act irresponsibly because they are acting on the wrong information. So, you don't want to be around someone who's sneezing. You know, that's just not a good thing right now. And then there's other things that are being turned up. Before I get into all this stuff, because there's some things that just don't make sense, and we don't want to downplay those too much, but there's basically two ways to look at this. Either the CDC is just totally inept, or this is being done purposefully. Now, I tend to think that the people at the CDC cannot be totally inept. First of all, it's not a government institution. It's a private institution that kind of is entangled with government entities, kind of like the Federal Reserve, but they're their own ship. They're not, the government really has no say in what they do or what they don't do. So in order for an organization like this to have someone at the head of their organization that was totally inept is hard for me to imagine that a guy could rise to that level and not have any skills and being, you know, not, he is a doctor. He's gone to college. He's got a degree in medicine. He's an MD. He isn't just a total fool, which leads us to the other conclusion that maybe this is being done purposefully. And I'll give you a couple examples of this. This is kind of how they would say something and be contradicted just a little bit later. Soon after the Thomas Eric Duncan died, and we're not sure that they got the day right because Israeli news was reporting that he died the day before it was announced in this country. Now, I don't know if they were just guessing or thinking and trying to make a headline when it wasn't really a headline, or if they had some inside information and they were just waiting to see if this guy was going to go zombie on him and come up from the dead. And I don't know. But soon after he had passed away, a nurse came down with Ebola. She tested positive for Ebola. She wasn't really sick at that time yet, but she was quarantined, which is, I actually think that if it's possible that she did have Ebola, that's a good move. But then the guy having his press conference, he goes on to say that the reason that she got this is because she didn't follow protocols. And he started citing things that could have happened. She could have touched her face with her gloves and people were saying that that's what she did, when he's saying she may have, or she said, she might've said she may have done that. But when it really was peeled back and the nurses' unions got up there, what did we find out? We found out that the hospital where she was working, which the CDC director had said was one of the best examples of a hospital that could deal with this kind of emergency in the United States. So this would be like the place you'd want to be if you had Ebola, or if you were working as, you know, for that, because it had everything that needed to be done to keep it from spreading. They hadn't gone and educated their nurses as to what the procedures really were. Now, additionally, they went on to survey nurses across the United States. They interviewed 2,000 nurses, and they found that 76% of these nurses, their hospital has not communicated anything to them about Ebola policy. Now, that is about 1,500 out of 2,000. And they said that of those 2,000 nurses, 85% of them said the hospital had not provided any education at all. 37% of them said that they didn't have enough protective gear in their hospital for daily use for more than a few days. They would run out of equipment right away. They just didn't have very much there. 39% said there were no plans to equip isolation rooms properly. So they might have an isolation room, but it doesn't have a negative pressure bed in it. Now, I did some research on my own here in the Rogue Valley. We have, actually, in the Rogue Valley, if you count Grants Pass, Ashland, and Medford, there are 4 major hospitals and some clinics with beds. But the clinics with beds are not up to par at all. And these 4 major hospitals, they average approximately 1 such bed per floor. And I couldn't get a hold of the Grants Pass Hospital, so I'm not sure about them. But the ones here in Medford Ashland area, there are 1 negative pressure bed per floor. So Rogue Valley Hospital has 4 floors. They have 4 beds. It wouldn't take very long for this situation to overwhelm that hospital, would it? If it really was real. And if it really was real, I think that the CDC and the public health officials across this country would realize, oh, crap, we're not prepared for this. And there'd be a lot more outcry and stuff. That's why I'm starting to think, is this really a real thing? So today I was looking to see if there's some conspiracy theories out there that would maybe start to doubt this. And first thing I came across was my own thinking. It wasn't anything that was online. We were told by the CDC that this had a 21-day incubate. This particular strain of the Ebola had a 21-day incubation period. So Mr. Duncan was first visited the hospital on September 24th, when 21 days from that point would mean that it would start, they would start showing symptoms about yesterday. Yet, I think that they said this nurse was on Monday. They said they had taken tests on her because she had complained of some of the symptoms. And so they had tested her, and on Monday they announced that she probably had it. She had tested positive. Now, it's possible that the test gives a false positive, but what they're really looking for in this test, I get, they take a sample of your blood and they put it through something that where the if there are antibodies in there, it'll congeal up in a certain period of time, and those the presence of those antibodies shows that you have been exposed to it, or you have the virus in your body, and you're either fighting it effectively or you're going to get really sick and maybe die. So I think that there was, to me, a clear indication that, well, it couldn't possibly have been a 20-day incubation period because she was not an emergency room nurse. She was someone who was there after he was admitted, which means that she probably shouldn't have been coming down with symptoms until maybe this weekend or maybe even the first part of next week. And if she was somebody that worked, and she says she only spent one day with him, and if it was towards the end of his life, she might not be able, she maybe shouldn't be coming down with these symptoms until maybe Halloween, that time of October, that part, that'd be 21 days. So there's a lot of stuff here that kind of made me question what's going on. And I started looking for information and more information and more information on this. The CDC said nothing. There's a lot of people wondering the same thing. I found other people that have these same questions. It's just like, how is this working? What is going on here? So I think that there's a lot that isn't being told. They're keeping secrets. And then I came across, I also remembered listening to an interview that Alex Jones had done with Robert David Steele, who is a former he's a former spy, worked in the, I think it was the NSA he worked in. He was somebody that was recommended to the program by Colonel Schaefer, who's a frequent guest on Alex's show. And Robert David Steele said the big thing that he had heard about that was planned to be coming up in either September or October was a planned Ebola outbreak. It would be a false Ebola outbreak, and they're going to use chemicals to produce symptoms that are similar to the symptoms you get when you have Ebola. And then I found out that, yes, indeed, formaldehyde, which is pretty readily available, can be introduced into a water supply and bring on Ebola-like symptoms so that people could maybe think that they had Ebola. And yet, so this thing that he was saying, that he said he had heard this through his contacts that are still within these agencies, he said that's a possibility. He said, well, I guess that could be possibly true. Again, the CDC has been really bad in providing information to the public in a way that they can analyze information like this and say, well, we would know if this is or isn't true. We should have blood samples from these different people, and we should make this available to independent testing laboratories or ones that have been approved, so that we can get confirm these results with different places, and we don't get false positives. Which is a possibility. Then we had this, the thing of the blood donors. Now, there's a doctor here that was working. I think he was in Samaritan's Purse. He worked for them, and he contracted Ebola, and he survived. And his blood contains active antibodies against this disease, which, by the way, is active in your body, even though you're not sick and dying from it anymore, but it's still active in your body, and you could contract it through sexual contact or whatever, up to 7 months after you've, gone through the critical stage where you're going to live. So you are like a typhoid Mary for quite a while after you've had this Ebola, if you survive. And you got to be really careful about who you should really kind of be in quarantine for quite a while, like maybe at least 3 months, and you should be tested and found to have none before you're released. But back to the subject. This doctor is donating his blood to these people who are coming down with the Ebola. But we know that he doesn't have AB blood because he was not a good match for Thomas Eric Duncan. So AB blood is the universal donor. So that ruled that one out. He doesn't have that blood type. So he has either O, A, or B. And the person whose article I was reading, and I posted a link to this in our Facebook page. It's the one with the blue picture. It says Ebola on it. If you're there and you're checking it out, that that person was going through the probabilities of these other two nurses having the right blood type that matched the doctor's blood type. And the probabilities are pretty, pretty small. In fact, they're very, very, very small, really low. And so this becomes kind of a, I mean, what are the chances of this happening? They're almost nil, and it did. But here we have a black man whose blood type wasn't correct. And these two nurses, one of them is, I believe she's Vietnamese descent. And the other one is, I think she's just Caucasian. And their blood types are okay. So this is, I'm not a racist people, but if I was an undereducated black man, there's undereducated white people too. I might think that this is some kind of, they're not going to give us this shot. This is going to save us from Ebola. They're holding it back because we're black. And I tell you, there's enough discrimination still left in this country that I wouldn't think that's an irrational thought. So those people might be clamoring for shots. There may not, and there might be people that aren't of correct blood type that are of other races that also will think that, well, gosh, you know, we want to make sure we get that shot because we don't want to die from this thing. This is a horrible thing. And so all of a sudden there's going to be millions and millions and millions of people that want to get vaccinated for Ebola because they see that these people, these two nurses, they got this blood sample, they got this blood transfusion, and they lived. And if this was being faked, it's pretty easy for them to come out of it. They can emerge from the formaldehyde poisoning or whatever. We didn't, the CDC is the one that tested the stuff. It didn't go to an independent lab. It went to them, and they're saying that they had a positive test for it. These people are tied in. They receive a lot of funding from Bill Gates. Bill Gates has a lot of, makes a lot of money off vaccines. We also posted a link to a story of people that worked inside the World Health Organization complaining about how the projects they were working on are being done to please the donors. They aren't necessarily the things that are going to be the most productive or produce the best results for the greatest number of people or even advance science in any way. They're just things that they're working on stuff for these donors like Bill Gates and so on and so forth. And he's the one that's specifically mentioned because his foundation, I think the World Health Organization, he donated $300 million and it's all directed to his projects. So all this time we've think these organizations are out there protecting us. They aren't. They're out there serving the interests of their donors, which is not a bad irrational policy either. I mean, that's where your money's coming from. That's what you do. But we shouldn't be under the illusion that they're going to be there to save us, because they're not. These vaccines, if they are produced, are probably going to be vaccines that serve the purposes of Bill Gates, who thinks the world is highly overpopulated. He's also a eugenicist. He basically thinks that he's of the superior race. And if these vaccines actually do give people Ebola, which people in Sierra Leone and Liberia are claiming right now, they're claiming that only people that get Ebola are people who have taken the shots. Well, if that's true, and you could maybe get a huge percentage of let's say, of minority peoples in this country to take vaccines, wiping them out, then, you know, that would serve your eugenics purpose. And trust me, Bill Gates is eugenicist. His father was. They were backers of the Nazis. They believe in the superior white Aryan race. They're Nazis. So, that's what I found out just from today's research, and it was kind of fun to read this stuff. I learned a lot of things. I think that it's possible that this is a false flag. They're trying to make an emergency to get a bunch of people to run out and get a shot. They did that during the H1N1 virus scare. And one little secret that the CDC has not told anybody is when they actually started to get all these samples back from people who had supposedly contracted the H1N1 virus, they all tested negative. They couldn't find one case of it in America. Yet they claimed that the vaccine saved all those people from catching it. But they couldn't find one confirmed case of it. But this is what happens. They scare everybody. They tell them it's spreading like wildfire. It's everywhere. And they tell the doctors, report anybody who has these symptoms. And they're saying, we have these cases here and these cases here and these cases here. And they're probably just getting a really, you know, an average case of flu. Everybody gets scared and takes the shots. And then later when they actually do the real testing on there are no confirmed cases of H1N1. But a lot of people took a shot. A lot of people made money. And the shots made a lot of people sick. I think they contributed over 3,000 deaths to those shots. By the way, that's about the number of people that died on 9/11. So there are terrorists among us. And it's probably something we can't prove that it was actually the shot that killed these people, but it was kind of a cause and effect reasoning, I admit. But at the same time, they died within days of receiving the shot. So there's a lot of things here that I think we should really keep our eye on. I'm not sure if this is a real epidemic or if this is a false epidemic. I know that there's that the CDC lies. We know that. That's the truth. That they don't know what they're talking about. That they contradict themselves almost on a daily basis. Those are things we know. And we also know that it's a good thing to protect your own self with your immune system, eating healthy foods and taking supplements. And that's all for tonight. We hope we don't have any more to report on Ebola next week. We hope that someone blows the whistle on it. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening. See you next week. You're bound to break.